and welcome to Parkinson's Life, the award-winning podcast offering a voice to the global Parkinson's community. Each episode, we bring together people impacted by the condition for an honest conversation to share their stories, perspectives, and ideas on how to live well with Parkinson's. This episode delves into the gender gap in Parkinson's research. It's estimated that 3 million women worldwide are living with the condition, but are there specific needs being properly addressed in scientific studies? It's a topic that is important to our guests, Dr. Annelien Oosterbaan, a physician researcher from the Netherlands, and retired family physician Dr. Sonia Mather from Toronto, Canada. Both Annelien and Sonia contributed to a recent study exploring gaps in awareness about sex and gender differences in Parkinson's. The paper, entitled Unmet Needs of Women Living with Parkinson's Disease, highlights how women's experiences of the condition have been an overlooked field, and includes recommendations to help tackle the problem. In their conversation, Annelien and Sonia discuss the areas they think have been neglected in Parkinson's research while sharing insights from their personal experiences of life with the condition.
My name is Annelien Oosterbaan. I'm 38 years old. I'm from Rotterdam, the Netherlands. And I got diagnosed in 2016, so now I've got Parkinson's since 5 years. I work as a physician researcher as well as an insurance doctor. I'm a mother of 4 children. I just delivered my 4th child 3 weeks ago. And it was the first pregnancy while having Parkinson's, and it was quite different than my others.
My name is Sonia Mather. I'm a little bit older. I'm 51 years old. I'm from Toronto, Canada. I was diagnosed at the age of 28. I had just finished my residency in family practice, family medicine, and was expecting my first child at that time. I continued to practice family medicine for about 12 years post-diagnosis, but then it became a little overwhelming in terms of my health situation as well. So I stopped clinical practice and sort of devoted myself to advocacy for the Parkinson's community and education. And I'm very interested in this topic of women and the gaps in research that we obviously have.
I think the gender gap in research only got to me since I got the diagnosis myself. And I noticed being an OBGYN and also a woman and also young, having cyclic patterns in my symptoms. Then I started to talk about this with my neurologist and also with other women having Parkinson's disease. And I noticed they just didn't know anything about this topic. And then I started to look onto Facebook for with women with Parkinson's disease, young women. And I noticed that this topic was really a hot topic, and women started asking more and more questions about this. And then I have been searching on PubMed and looking for information and just couldn't find anything. So that when I started to feel the need to jump into this topic for research.
My experience was similar, Annelien. I found that throughout my over 2 decades of being in this community, I've heard a lot of stories from women about their experiences, which seem to differ from my male counterparts in the community. And that led me to do some research as well and look into what's been done. And I was kind of staggered by the lack of information that was out there, the lack of guidelines that were there from any kind of defined formal research when it came to women and Parkinson's disease and their life experience and how it affected them specifically. And so there really is a gender gap in a lot of ways in terms of women participating in research. And also the lack of women in research really does affect our management as well.
Yes, there's a big lack of women in clinical trials, of course, the medication trials, obviously also because the medication is really old and we are just using the same dosage and the same medication as men.
Absolutely. And women in general experience different symptoms. The presentation can be different. The prognosis can be different. The progression can be different. The way we're affected during our different hormonal stages in life are different. We face different psychosocial stressors. So there is a difference between men and women in our life experience with Parkinson's disease. How did you find your healthcare team approached you specifically as a woman with Parkinson's? Was there any attention paid to that?
No, not at all. I think they only look at the medical side of the Parkinson's, like the medication, the treatment, but that's only just a small part of the disease and the need, because of course there's a family, there's children, there's a relationship, there's a job, there's your hormonal fluctuations and all that, sexuality, maybe a pregnancy wish, but it's all just topics that are not really discussed actually. I started to talk about these topics with my neurologist, and now she also is asking other female patients about hormonal fluctuations and all that. But before she didn't. But it's also, of course, they don't know what to do about it.
No, that's absolutely right. And that's why, you know, gender equality or equity in research is so important, because we have to know what to tell our clinicians to recommend. We have to have guidelines that are based on actual clinical trials in order to justify management decisions. So you're right. If you ask the question, you have to have an answer.
And they just don't. There's just such a big gap in knowledge. But it's also exciting because there's lots we can do research on.
The paucity of evidence that is out there is also conflicting in a lot of ways. You know, one study will show, for instance, that hormone replacement decreases the incidence of PD, whereas other study will show that it perhaps increases it if it's given at a certain time. So there are no real clear-cut evidence-based guidelines available. Annalene and I were privileged to be part of a paper that discussed the unmet needs of women living with Parkinson's disease, because we recognized that there were differences in the way women presented with this disease, how they progressed, and the different strategies that were necessary in order to optimize the quality of life for women living with this disease. So we came together and did a literature search, which was very eye-opening in terms of the gaps and controversies in this area, and came to some conclusions about what could be done to improve the quality of life for women living with Parkinson's disease, as well as applying it to the broader PD community, because sometimes in our differences lies the answer. So I think that's important for the community as a whole.
Yes, I agree. And I became involved in Parkinson's disease and also in this paper because I'm a young woman and also a gynecologist. So I could add some of my background to this topic. Before, I was just raising awareness, trying to change the imaging on Parkinson's disease, since everyone still has the perception that it's an old man's disease, and it just isn't. Like 5% of the patients are below 40, and almost half of them are women. So before I was just fighting to change the imaging and raise awareness on this topic, and then later on I found out that of course I could use my profession to do something good for other women with Parkinson's disease. Also because I noticed these cyclic patterns, and there was just no evidence in literature that they are there. And I'm really convinced that they are. So that's the first thing we need to do, is to prove that there are cyclic patterns and hormonal influences on Parkinson's symptoms. And then the next step will be how to treat this problem and how to help women.
Absolutely. You're right, Annalene. I mean, the first thing is identifying the issues, identifying the problems that, or the differences that we have in terms of presentation and the lack of information that we have about managing women through all their sort of life stages hormonally. And as well through some of this sort of unique situations that we as women face, which is pregnancy, which you've just been through, and I have gone through as well with Parkinson's disease, and the lack of information that's out there for women going through already a big stressor in some ways to their bodies, and how to manage the Parkinson's on top of all of that.
Yes, I thought it was really difficult to decide whether I wouldn't dare to become pregnant with Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. How did you decide, Sonia? Of course, you didn't have children yet, or you got diagnosed in your first pregnancy.
Yes, that's correct.
What kind of symptoms did you have? How did they find out?
It was pretty typical. I had a tremor in my right pinky finger. I was expecting at the time, and it was intermittent at first, so I kind of ignored it and didn't think too much of it. But then it became more constant and concerning. And my diagnosis, unlike many women, which can be quite an arduous journey, mine came pretty quickly. I went to see my local neurologist, and they decided that it was Parkinson's disease, young onset, which was unusual. And of course, I didn't believe them until it was confirmed by somebody else. And then my symptoms just kept progressing through my disease. At least at that point in time, I wasn't on any medication. I didn't have to deal with the sort of issues with medication usage during pregnancy. But I found at that time, Annalene, I don't know if you had a different experience, but all through my pregnancies, the three pregnancies were very different. At the first one, they didn't really know what to do with me. So I just had a normal pregnancy and ended up delivering by cesarean. My second pregnancy, I had everyone in the room and everyone involved, geneticists, high-risk OBs, and, you know, everyone was in the room at the time that I delivered. And the third one, again, they didn't know what to do. So it was just kind of a regular pregnancy. Did you find that, you know, compared to your previous pregnancies, this one little angel that you had more recently, that it was handled differently for you?
Yes, it was handled differently, but it was especially due to myself, I think, because I went to see a gynecologist in an academic medical center. Because I just wanted to have the best care I could get. I dived into literature to find out as much information as possible. And I sent over these papers to my gynecologist as well as my neurologist. I asked to go to see a geneticist to find out whether I was a carrier of any mutations.
That's the issue, Annalene. I mean, you're very highly educated in this area, so you knew how to advocate for yourself and what to look for and what to, counsel your healthcare team on. But that's not available to most women. And that's why it's so important to identify that issue and to sort of educate healthcare providers on what to say. But of course, then the research needs to be done.
And also educate women so they know how to get the best care. But that's true. I'm, of course, highly educated and I can find my own information. But still, I think all women should have access to this. And there needs to be much more information. So currently, I'm working on the Pregnancy and Parkinson's Registry to make sure there will be an international registry for Parkinson's and pregnancy to collect as much data as possible, because now there are only some case reports to be found on PubMed, but I think only 50 or so pregnancies have been described, but there must be much more. Already when you look at Facebook fora, you find so many women being pregnant or want to become pregnant with Parkinson's. So we just need to have an international collaboration and start collecting as much data as possible to be able to say something about the safety of medication, the effects on the child, the effects on the mother as well. What did you find to be the most challenging as being a woman with Parkinson's, Sonia?
I think other than the pregnancy issue and the lack of sort of knowing what was happening and what I should be doing, what I shouldn't be doing, I think it's been challenging for me, not so much from a symptom perspective. I did not notice a lot of change during my menstrual cycle with my symptoms personally. I have, however, found a change now that I've sort of headed towards that menopause stage. Because I'm a physician, I've been able to adjust my medications to a certain extent, depending on how I'm feeling and my, hormonal stat at that time. But I didn't have any clear guidance from my healthcare team as to what I should be doing. So I found that a little bit disconcerting in terms of trying to deal with my symptoms. But I think the more sort of impactful difference that I found was the psychosocial stuff. As women, I think we sort of have this innate sense of responsibility for home and family. And I found that kind of psychosocial stressor to some extent has been difficult to sort of manage. I have a very supportive husband who really understands that fatigue and stress add to my symptoms. And he's always very, very helpful, as well as my three daughters, who are now 23, 21, and 17. So they're very, very helpful in the house. But still, that sort of need or sense of responsibility, I find, has probably added to my symptoms more than probably some of my male friends in this Parkinson's community. What about you, Annalene? What have you found most challenging being a woman with PD?
Well, I think as being a woman, I always have the feeling, and it's also the person that I am, that I have to take care of others and that other shouldn't have to take care of me. So I take care of the kids, the household, my boyfriend. I do all the things in the house. Sometimes you just are a little bit tired or it doesn't really work as well as you would want it to be. But I still try to do everything at as well as before. And I still manage, but there comes a time that I won't be able to manage, and then I think it will be hard to let the others take care of me. And also another challenging thing is, of course, the little children that I have, and I don't want them to worry. Of course, your children, Sonia, are already a little bit older. And also, you don't want them to worry, but they maybe understand a little bit better than my children. They're 6, 8, and 10. And they, as they see my tremor and my hand worse, like fluctuate over the day. And then sometimes they grab my hand and say, "Stop, stupid hand," or "Mommy, don't stress," you know, and that you just don't want to show. So I think that's difficult, being a mom, and you just want to be their mother and don't want them to worry. And I did notice the menstrual fluctuations, but it's not that bad, you know. As when you find out that that's the problem, then you're already a little bit relieved. Before, I thought the first days I noticed this worsening of my symptoms, I thought, oh no, this is the new baseline, you know. And then it got better again. I thought, oh no, it's gone. And then every month it came back. And after I noticed this cyclic pattern, I was kind of relieved, actually, because I knew there would be better days coming after, 3 or 4 days before my period.
Right. And that's one of the problems, Annalene, that we identified in the paper, was that lack of women knowing what to track and when to track it, you know, in terms of their symptoms versus their menstrual stage or cycle, because that's really important information that they could share with their healthcare provider, their movement disorder specialist.
Since we've written this paper together, what topics do you think need to be addressed more concerning women and Parkinson's disease?
Can I say all of them? Because I think there's such a lack of research, and the research that out there is so conflicted that we really don't have a clear idea of what we can do in order to manage women effectively to optimize their quality of life. I think there need to be set guidelines. We discussed before about educating clinicians to ask the questions of women, how their symptoms vary with their menstrual cycle, you know, and so forth, or what their different psychosocial stressors are, or how this impacts their everyday life. But we need to also have the answers as well, guidelines that clinicians can refer to in order to advise their female patients in order to live better with this disease, in order to not just survive, but thrive with Parkinson's disease. So I think there's really a lot of work to be done. There are a lot of gaps and controversies involved with women and Parkinson's disease and research in general. Specifically, I would say it would be great to get some guidelines with pregnancy. I mean, Parkinson's disease is the fastest growing neurological disease in the world. So the numbers of women that are going to be in the situation where they are childbearing years and living with Parkinson's disease is going to increase. And as well, I think the whole hormonal fluctuation, because if you think about it, you know, having 3 or 4 or 5 days of the month where your symptoms are worse and possibly impacting your quality of life on a monthly basis is a lot of time of disability for women. And if that we can change would be great, as well as understanding what to advise women with Parkinson's disease when it comes to hormone replacement therapy, which, you know, are questions that I'm facing right now, I think is also really important. So things that will help in the management of women to optimize their quality of life. Annalene, what about you? What do you think you gleaned from the paper that was most important to address?
Well, of course, for me, the hormonal fluctuations and the hormonal issues are most important, being a gynecologist. But first, I'm working on this survey in the Netherlands. It will be out there this month to first get an idea of the problems that live with women with Parkinson's, and just a really broad survey that you have been working on this also, Sonia, right? An international survey to look at all the different topics like pregnancy, hormonal issues, but also relationships, job issues. They're all important topics, but first we need to get them under attention and see how big these problems are, and then we can address them.
You're listening to episode 14 of series 2 of the Parkinson's Life podcast with Annalene and Sonia. Be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform to hear more from the series.
So Annalene, you mentioned that we should be educating healthcare providers about the gender gap in research. How do you think we can achieve that?
Well, I told you I've been working on the survey among women with Parkinson's disease, but I'm also working on the survey to spread out through all neurologists in the Netherlands. first to find out how many women they have been seeing in their outpatient clinic, young women with Parkinson's disease, whether they have any experience with pregnancy and Parkinson's disease, and then to ask them whether they are aware of the topic of cyclic patterns in Parkinson's symptoms or hormonal influences on Parkinson's symptoms. So I just want to know how many neurologists are even aware of this problem. There are just so little neurologists asking about this. So that's the first step to raising awareness. And then after I have finished the survey and got the data from the women, I want to write a guideline or a sort of a management. And then I will spread this to the all neurologists in the Netherlands as well.
I agree. I think that educating the healthcare providers specifically about the issues that women deal with compared to their male patients is really important, because it'll also influence their approach to research trials as well. That parity in those that they try and enroll in the clinical trials is really important, because X treatment may affect a woman differently than it does a man. And so that information is needed in order to truly understand the effect of any intervention. That sex or gender difference is really important from that perspective, because a lot of women don't necessarily participate in clinical trials according to surveys because they're not asked. And so if you impress upon the researchers or the neurologists that are recruiting for these trials that women are really needed in enrolling in clinical trials, then that perhaps might expedite that increase in parity of who participates in a clinical trial as well.
Sonja, were you interested in how the Parkinson's community responded to the report?
Once the paper came out, I noticed that there was really an outpouring of women on social media, as well as private messaging, about their experiences with Parkinson's disease and how they had not felt validated in some ways by their current management team in terms of being feeling comfortable in order to speak about those differences or even understand that those differences exist. So the paper seemed to almost be a catalyst for conversation about what their life experiences were and how they differed, the psychosocial stressors, the support that they needed that perhaps was different or unique to them. So I felt like the paper really was a catalyst for having that conversation. What did you think, Annalene, when the paper came out?
Well, I was really happy to find out that not only the women, but also the healthcare providers were really excited about our paper, and they really we're happy to read about this topic. I think from this is just a starting point, of course, for starting a discussion on this topic, but also to accelerate more research and work together internationally and to get this topic on the map. Because I think from here, much more trials and much more studies will be started. And I'm really happy with that.
Right. And Aline, was there anything that came of our paper that really surprised you?
Not really, actually. It only confirmed the gaps that I already thought there were. And I did find it surprising to see all the controversies, most importantly on the hormonal suppletion and all that. It just doesn't say anything, actually. It doesn't help at all.
Yeah, that was my impression as well, Annalene. I was surprised to see how little had really been done overall in this space and how much disparity there does exist in what is actually out there, the knowledge that is there. One of the things I did find kind of interesting was when it came to treatments being offered to women, that less than 25% of people that get DBS are women, because it's not offered as much, even though the quality of life for women seems to improve significantly after a procedure like DBS. And the other thing from a social point of view is I didn't realize that women are twice as more likely to have a paid caregiver compared to men, and are more likely to end up in nursing homes compared to men, which I think is really important for us to know, not just as patients, but as medical professionals, so we can think about how to plan for the future for our patients as well. So Annalene, we know that there's obviously a gender gap in research. Do you think this also is influential in terms of how women get diagnosed and the process or journey that they take on the road to diagnosis?
I do think that this is different for women because I think, first of all, because of the perception of Parkinson's disease, that it's like it's an old man's disease. So when you go see a healthcare provider and you're a young woman, I think there's a delay in diagnosis because they just don't think of you as a woman that you can have Parkinson's disease. That's a thing. I think also women go see a doctor later than men because they just don't take such good care of themselves or just don't take the time to visit a healthcare provider. So that could also be a reason to have a delay in diagnosis.
I think that's spot on, but I think that's also amplified if you look at other cultural nuances as well. There are a lot of underrepresented minorities in research or in care in general. So I think, yes, I agree with what you're saying. And I think there might be even a cultural overlay for underrepresented communities as well.
And also then, of course, the differences in symptoms that as women, we may have more like psychological symptoms and different way to show our Parkinson's. So that also makes it difficult maybe to get a proper or early diagnosis, which is important because with an early diagnosis, you can get early treatment, of course.
Absolutely.
Do you think things are changing in addressing the gender gap in research?
I do. I do think that things are changing. We have to also change the people funding the research in terms of what they expect from the studies or researchers that they're funding. That's happening. That's happening in the UK. It's also happening in the US at organizations like Michael J. Fox Foundation, where they actually have a committee set up to review grants that they're going to be giving to see if there is a parity in terms of underrepresented communities as well as women. So I think things are changing and the recognition that there are differences are changing because of papers like the one we were involved with and others, that there is an issue, there is a problem. So researchers themselves are starting to recognize that this area needs to be looked at more so than compared to when I was diagnosed a couple of decades ago. So Annalene, questions may be a little hard to answer or maybe not, but are you hopeful about the future for our Parkinson's community?
I'm always hopeful for the future of a Parkinson's community because I'm a really positive person and I really trust on the quality and of the research being done and the clinicians and researchers doing their best job on doing research on Parkinson's disease and treatment options and all that. I really think that the future will be much different. And maybe from now on, in the next 10 years, I think a lot will change and we will find out so many new things on Parkinson's. And I really hope there will be something to be found to stop the disease progression, at least. Even better would be to treat the disease. But I'm really hopeful that we will find something.
I'm also very hopeful, Annalene. I'm hopeful for a few reasons. One is when I started out with this diagnosis, it was only talks about dopamine. Any conference I would go to was always about dopamine. But that thinking has changed now. And now there's so much out of the box thinking, so many more shots on goal in terms of what the cause for Parkinson's is, because you can't cure what you don't know. So I think that understanding of the disease is increasing. I'm also hopeful because now researchers not only understand the importance of gender, but they also are really starting to understand the importance of patients being involved in the research process and that patient-centered approach, so that any treatments that are being developed are really meeting the unmet needs of the community. In this case, it would be the unmet needs of women in our community, but in unmet needs in general, involving patients in directing research and involved in, you know, the recruitment process and study design, as well as disseminating the information afterwards. That gives me a lot of hope because I think together the research community and the patients community need to work in order to get this done.
Sonia, how has your life changed since you became involved in Parkinson's research and campaigning? Because you have been doing it for a while, right?
I have been. My life has changed rather drastically. I mentioned that I worked with Parkinson's disease in a clinical medical practice for about 12 years. And once I stopped, I really was almost thrown into a state of depression because I missed my clinical practice. I missed my patients and being involved with their lives. But by the time I sort of turned myself to advocacy, I felt a renewed sense of purpose. and being involved with the community, hearing the stories, learning from them, and also being hopefully able to influence and educate others has really been a self-fulfilling thing for me. You know, there was a time where I used to say, people would ask about research specifically. So what's going on in research? And my answer was always, oh, they're working on it. But little did I realize that they're working on it means I should be working on it. You know, we as a patient community need to be working on it. And so that kind of purpose in order to increase, you know, participation in research, educate patients on how to live well with this disease in terms of optimizing their own quality of life has really given me a sense of purpose. And it's something that I'm very passionate about. And Aline, you've been active. I mean, it took me a while to get to that point of being active in the community. You've been more active recently, despite your busy life schedule. How have you felt since you've started being involved in the community?
Well, I just found that I needed to do this because I'm still young and I have this much energy and I'm still working. So I just wanted to do something, and it really makes me happy. I've been working the other 4 days as an insurance doctor almost a year now. But the one day that I work on my research on Parkinson's, it really makes me so happy and really gives me purpose as well. It's just really satisfactory to be able to do something for other young women living with Parkinson's disease. And I would advise every other patient or person to get involved as well, of course, just to raise awareness or fundraise or do whatever you can. And if you're not able to, of course, you don't have to. But if you are able, I would really recommend it because it gives you purpose and meaning and you can be able to do good. Well, Sonja, it has been lovely chatting with you today on the podcast. I'm really grateful to have met you, and I hope we'll be working together in the future as well. I think we will.
I agree, Annalene. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you and getting to know you as well and your lovely family. I'm in awe of your ability to juggle all things in life, including work and home and 4 beautiful babies. So it's been an inspiration and a pleasure for me as well.
Parkinson's Life magazine is produced by Speak Media on behalf of the European Parkinson's Disease Association, the leading voice for Parkinson's in Europe. For the latest research and information on Parkinson's, visit epda.eu.com. This podcast has been supported by a grant from the Boston Scientific Foundation Europe, whose mission is to improve patient well-being using digital or innovative solutions. Thanks for listening to the Parkinson's Life podcast. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review. It helps make sure others can find us. If you'd like to share your story with Parkinson's Life magazine, get in touch through Facebook, Twitter, or by emailing editor@parkinsonslife.eu. Keep a lookout for our next episode, and until then, take care.